What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology, now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with a city on edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorindi returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare, on Prime Video, now streaming.
Welcome, everybody, to another horror movie review with the Hometown Ghost Stories crew. I am your host, Rob Coakley. I am joined, as always, by Dave Wilkins.
What's going on?
And we, once again, are blessed by the presence of Jesse Wilkins, who has come around and started watching more of these horror movies with us.
I am the horror movie expert, and it's good to be back, boys.
That's true. When, you know, people ask for blurbs on movies now, they... Like, we got to get, you know, Stephen King, Jesse Wilkins, you know.
Those other guys.
Manute Bol. I don't know. That's the first name that came into my mind there for another celebrity.
That's pretty much the list. So that's it.
For all the movie critics, that's it.
That's true. And this week we are covering Sinister 1 and Sinister 2, which very interesting juxtaposition between the two movies for my reviews, but we will get into it. For now, Dave, why don't you read us the synopsis of this movie.
Of Sinister. So the original Sinister movie from 2012 was directed by Scott Derrickson, written by C. Robert Cargill and Scott Derrickson. So true crime writer Ellison Oswald is in a slump. He hasn't had a bestseller in more than 10 years and is becoming increasingly desperate for a hit. So when he discovers the existence of a snuff film showing the deaths of a family, he vows to solve the mystery. He moves his own family into the victim's home and gets to work. However, when old film footage and other clues hint the presence of a supernatural force, Ellison learns that living in the house may be fatal. So, this movie, I liked a lot of things about it, and I really liked a lot of things about it. And obviously, though, if you've seen the movie, everyone knows that the best part of this movie is the Super 8 films, the snuff films that were spliced throughout the movie, and they were done in a masterful way. I think this movie could have really been blown and could have been an absolute train wreck if they didn't have the right director, if they didn't have the right actors, and it could have just been, you could have had the exact same script, and it could have just been an absolute disaster. But the writers and director and actors all killed it. Really good character development, really good characters, really good acting. And again, like, you really got this. I mean, there's a ton of found footage movies out there. This one, I think, is one of the best as far as the found footage parts go. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so like for me, personally, I really enjoyed Sinister. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. I enjoyed it rewatching it this time. The Super 8, using it as a Super 8 film where you get that grainy, just the way they do the music with that grainy footage. It's just so like unsettling, right?
It's just unnerving. And I'm glad you brought up the sound, because the sound is the best part. Like, obviously, yeah. Like the scenes are great. The kills are subtle. Like, there's nothing like, except for the lawnmower one. Nothing crazy. And that lawnmower jump scare is arguably the best jump scare in horror.
It'll probably get you every time too, right? Because I know it got me the first time, and I know rewatching it got me again. So I'm like, if I watch this movie again, I'm probably gonna get hit, even though I know it's coming. That jump scare is still gonna get me.
Well, they did it with the score too. So you had the creepy music going, and then like as soon as like something awful happens, you have that big like scream and the boom in the music. And obviously I pay close attention to the scores and these kinds of things, but the Lawnmower one is the one that got you. And I like that it started with it as well. Like yeah. with the Super 8 footage.
Yeah. I mean, like, so that's the other thing. This movie grabs you immediately because the very first thing you see is that tree scene. And you're like, are they hanging? They're not hanging. Their feet are on the ground. Why are their feet on the ground? What is happening here? And just the way, like, and then you're like looking over to the side and you kind of see the thing. And then you see the branch come down and you just see them all lift. And you're just like, holy shit, what is this movie? Like, if you had no idea about what this movie was. And then going to Dave's point, I was never like a huge Ethan Hawke fan in terms of some of the movies I had seen him with in. I just thought he was always okay. Stuff he does in the horror genre, though, I always really enjoy Ethan Hawke's performances in horror movies, even ones that I don't particularly love. The first Purge comes to mind. I thought he was phenomenal in that movie, even though I was just kind of on it.
I'm not sure I consider that horror, maybe thriller.
Yeah, Purge. I guess it's...
It toes the line. Yeah. Not my favorite movie either. I thought he was good in it.
Yeah, he was great in it. I thought he was great in this movie as well.
There's not a lot that I didn't like that he's been in. You know, Training Day is a great one, but he's never really like the lead guy. You know,
I never felt like he had to be the character in a lot of movies, right? Like, I always felt he was very replaceable. Training Day is a great movie. You replace Ethan Hawke with almost any other actor in the movie is still a great movie. It's Denzel's movie.
Yeah.
Right. Ethan Hawke doesn't command the presence that he should be in that movie as the co-lead in that. That is a Denzel movie. And it's nothing against Ethan Hawke. We're talking about Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
You know, one of the greatest actors of all time. So, but like he did like Assault on Precinct 13. I watched. He's just fine in it. Like, he's just fine in a lot of movies, but his horror stuff is really, really good. So he's great in this. The wife's really good. Deputy so-and-so played the part well as a side character. It was great.
Yeah, good. He was good in that supporting role.
Right. As a supporting role, it was great.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, my God. It's almost like a waste because Vincent D'Onofrio is such a good actor that to have him in almost that like cameo style role is almost like a disservice, but he's great in that role as well.
That character actually is one of my negatives about this movie.
You think how much do you think he got paid for two Zoom calls?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He probably did all right. Just get that big name, but we can get into the negatives later.
We'll get into that later. Yeah.
Yeah. What else did you like about this, Jesse?
I thought it started, like we said, it grabbed us right away. All the actors were phenomenal. And this is a big one for me because usually it's hit or miss with child actors, and the kids actually did a really good job. All the kids were great actors. I thought the wife was good. Ethan Hawke was good. The whole development of the story was really cool because you really thought it was going to be a serial killer movie, right? Where I liked where the movie went, but I felt like I really wanted them to solve the crime. I wanted them to find the serial killer because I feel like it actually could have been a better movie. But the way that it panned out, I'm cool with it. But there's still like I want another movie where it isn't a demon, and I want them to actually find the serial killer because that would have been a really cool movie too. But
I also very much liked that for the first, I don't know how long it was, but you didn't know what the antagonist was. Right. You didn't know. You were like, what is, like the serial, obviously they were pointing in the direction of serial killer. They turned it to the occult. But I liked that confusion because it tied into this movie just being unsettling.
And it was a great build.
There was a really pivotal scene, and I'm sure you guys remember it, but it was a very pivotal scene where obviously he had found the footage. He's watching the footage. He's realizing what he has. And then I think he kind of realizes that his family is in danger still being in that house because the serial killer is clearly, he had returned to the scene, right? To leave that evidence for him. Obviously the police would have found that box of movies in the attic.
That would have been a huge hole.
Right. Yeah. So clearly he knows that he's in some sort of danger, and he actually dials 911, and you see him, he's looking at his copy of Kentucky Blood on the shelf. That was his one hit book, where that was what, you know, was his claim to fame. And you could see it processing in his head. You know, it's like, okay, I'm probably in danger. My family's probably in danger. I have actual evidence that the police right. should be looking at.
Right.
But this could be my next hit. And the police already said that they want nothing to do with me. All of this, I'm presuming, is what's going through his head, but it obviously is. So he hangs up the 911 call and doesn't go to the police for help until Officer so-and-so shows up.
And that's the great part of Ethan Hawke, is everything you just said is what he showed without saying anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah. like, right. Like, you nailed it perfectly. That's exactly what's going through his head. 30 different thoughts. He doesn't say a word, but we know what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm. And this would have created a huge plot hole as well, because for all we know, these tapes in that box of movies probably wasn't real and nobody else could see them anyways, in theory, right? Because he burns them. But then when they show the burning trash later in the movie, like, you can't actually see the movies burning once the wife comes out. And then the box obviously mysteriously just reappears. So I think this whole box of movies is something that the demon created to lure him into the whole scheme that he's got going on, perhaps.
So when I first saw this movie, I had thought that it was going in a certain direction, and it didn't. I thought that this was all in his head, and he was creating it, and the tapes didn't exist, the demon didn't exist. And I thought that this was his character arc was like a mental breakdown. That's what I thought we were dealing mm-hmm. with. It didn't end up going that way. I was a little disappointed that they went with
that was the predictable way, though. Like, so many horror movies go that way. So it's like you deal with this. There was a Johnny Depp movie that was kind of similar, where Secret he was where he was a writer, and it turned out that he was the crazy guy the whole time, right? So when I first started, now mind you, I had seen this movie a long, long time ago, and I apparently remember absolutely nothing, because I watched it again and I had no idea that ending was coming. We'll talk about that later. But this was basically like watching a brand new movie for me. So apparently I retained none of that information. So I had forgotten most of it. But I think the predictable route when you're watching that movie, knowing that it's a horror movie, is that he's going to end up being the bad guy and killing his family, right?
So no, yeah, I think they're leading you to believe it was a serial killer. You said it yourself. So I don't think it was that
predictable. Right, okay. So maybe this was the second development once he started seeing ghosts in the house.
I guess it would have been predictable, because I was saying that that's where I thought it was going. I guess that's the definition of predictability.
Can we talk about the fact that, as much as I like this movie and a lot of other horror movies, the absolute narcissism of these screenwriters to always give the main character the job as a writer, like, that's like such a common job for people.
It's the biggest trope. It's one of the biggest tropes. It goes back to the horror writers. The horror writer is always writing about the horror writer. Stephen King in Misery. Yeah. Actually, Stephen King does it in almost all of his books.
Right.
Like, he's always, like, the main character is always about a writer. And I mean, that's
you're right, Rob.
They might even do it subconsciously.
Okay. So here's problem number one with the movie, is them putting that stupid sweater on Ethan Hawke. He's got to have the I'm a writer sweater. Yeah, I hate those sweaters. Point. They stuck it on Johnny Depp that whole movie. They stuck it on him. It's like, I hate that. Like the writers always have that sweater. I guess if we want to really start writing good episodes, guys, we got to go get one of those sweaters.
That's true. Right?
Yeah, we got to do that. We got to drink coffee, and we got to have messy hair.
Why don't we use that sweater as a jump off into the negative stuff? Because I have kind of a lot of negative about this movie, actually, also.
Yeah.
So there's some things that don't add up about this movie, and that annoyed me a little bit. Not enough to like put it in the con section, but it's enough to put it in the this doesn't add up section. So they're broke, right? And he says, in quote, we're broke. And we were, when he was explaining to her why he bought the house where the murder happened, when she found out during that big argument, which was a great turning mm-hmm. point in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I was just waiting for that argument the whole movie. Really, like, I can't wait for this argument.
Of course it was coming.
I saw the deception too, and she's like, tell me we didn't move two houses down from the place. He's like, no, we didn't.
Yeah. Right, first of all, you knew this guy, and you knew he moved you right into the murder house. So yeah. You knew it. Like, you're not pretending you didn't know. Anyway, so he said, we were broker than we've ever been. This house just popped up, and it was a steal. But then when they move out, they move back into their mansion that they never sold.
Yeah.
You're sitting on a sell the mansion if you're broke. You had to buy this murder house because it was on the market.
They did mention that they were trying to sell it. they did mention that they were
yeah, they just they it. Hadn't sold it yet. Okay. So it's still plausible that they have that house, and they said that he could keep the house if he went and like wrote college textbooks. So like his plan was probably just to go back and start doing that mundane work after they leave the house. So I'm guessing that's what they were leading us to believe.
Okay, maybe not as big of a didn't add up as I thought. So we'll scratch that one off the list. He possibly should have been tipped off that that something was off when he found a scorpion in his attic in Pennsylvania.
Yep,
maybe that.
I like how that played into things later on, but that doesn't seem like something that happens in Pennsylvania.
I also did like that, but I didn't like the way they did it. We can get into that later. But then the last thing that I thought that didn't add up was the point of Bagul is that he chooses a child to consume their soul. But then he also kills the entire family for, I guess, no reason. But that also includes souls of other children that he could have consumed.
So part of the ritual. Yeah. They tell you how it's part of the ritual and for it to like, I don't know if this is like a real world thing, but like in terms of the movie, their whole thing was part of the ritual is he basically has to, and you see this a little more in the second movie, and we'll get into that before my eyes pop out of my head. But there's a ritual for it, and the ritual has to take place. Like the family has to die. The child has to like kill the family, and then he consumes their soul. Okay. Is basically the gist of that.
Right. So I do see your point, though, where there could be more, but go ahead.
It could have been explained better, is what I'll say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And to answer your question, it's just a movie. Bagul is not an actual pagan deity. Right. They made
based loosely off that, and they actually do touch that on that in the second movie, which we will get into that disaster soon enough.
Yeah.
So my cons for this movie, too much monster. Like this, I think you get too much. So you see him, you see Bagul in the beginning a little bit here and there. And I thought they started to add him in really nicely. Like I did a really good job where you go back and you're like, oh shit, there he is in that video. And when he was at the bottom of the pool, very creepy.
Yeah. Why is he black and he breathing in the bottom of the pool? Yeah. Your first hint that he's something supernatural.
Yep.
He's able to stand in the pool.
Yeah, you're like, oh shit, what the hell is that? But as the movie gets on, you get to see more and more of him. And I think when you start towards the end, when you see like the full Bagul, like in his full form, not scary. I think you're getting into the...
You didn't find Demon John Wick scary?
I just didn't think. And the worst was the very ending when he pops up on the screen. I fucking hated that ending.
Okay, I'm so mad you stole that from me.
Sorry.
My biggest problem with this movie is that.
So I think you have a classic case of too much monster. And I think they're even like, they're getting into the territory of like Jeepers Creepers.
All right. I got three issues with the movie.
That was my first con. You go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were making, you had a whole list.
That's yeah, your first you've gone con. Through all right. about 30 I've, things,
I've,
Dave.
Before you steal all the good ones, let me point out a couple ones. For one I already mentioned was the stupid writer sweater. We don't like the writer sweater. Number two is, we have another case of a little kid being way too good artwork. So the paintings on the wall were just way too good. It's like, no little kid is. I have kids. I've seen their art. It sucks. There's no way that her art's going to be that good. Anyways, just way too good, way too creative for a kid. My kids make great artwork. I'm sorry. I said that, guys. I love you. And then my number three, my biggest pet peeve wasn't necessary in this movie, maybe a little too much of Bagul, the main demon, but the kid ghosts in this movie were not scary at all. Their makeup was corny. The jump scares sucked. The stupid scene where Ethan Hawke's kind of losing his mind going through the house and they were like running around behind him, like that was not scary at all. Nothing 300%. About the kids. I know the kids were important to the story.
No, they weren't.
But they were not. They were okay. I agree with you. They're unnecessary.
The disappearing of the kids is important to the story. We don't need the kid ghosts.
They sucked.
It's a stupid horror trope, and I hate that they put it in there. And this movie had way too many of these stupid horror tropes that were way unnecessary.
Like, and the jump scares weren't even good with them. They weren't even good jump scares. Like all of a sudden you got a kid with this, you know, like the disease in Game of Thrones where they have half their face turns to rock.
Yeah, great.
That was so poorly done.
And there were a lot of cheap jump scares in this, not even just with the kids. There was the kid in the box, which got me. I jumped.
That was a great scene.
It was unnecessary. Well, it was also that whole storyline of the kid having what was the point of that? What did that have to do with anything? It didn't, but it wasn't even like, it threw you off though.
Cause you thought he was going to be the
right.
Kid
that's why
that would make sense.
That's why they right, had it. They wanted, they wanted to subvert your expectation. Yeah, I get why they did that. They thought that like, as you learn more and you realize that it's one of the kids from the family, you're like, oh, well, he's moved into this house. He's starting to get his, he's had night terrors, but never like this before. So he's escalating until he's the killer is what you're supposed to think.
Why is he in a box?
And I,
like, do you have night, does night terrors make you climb into boxes?
Well, they told you that he's, it's not the strangest place they found him, like in other houses. They found him in
the dryer or something.
Yeah. Like, so they're giving you the reasoning behind it. I don't hate it. I don't think it's like, it's whatever to me. I'm fine with it. I get what they were doing. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So I didn't like how, I thought it had basically nothing to do with the plot. I guess you could say it's like a, I think if it is like a misdirection, I think it's lazy. Cause like at the end, it was just like, oh, all that buildup we did for this kid, it's not, it's the daughter. Ha. Oh, okay.
But they also show you that it's probably going to be the daughter too. They give you hints that it's her.
Yeah. When she painted
with the drawings. Yeah.
Yeah. When she painted the actual Bagul on her wall and she's just looking all scared at it. That was actually a pretty good scene.
It could have just been
even though the artwork was way too good.
Right.
I think with a problem with a lot of these cheap jump scares, I mean, the kid in the box is just one example. There was the dog that was stupid. And I thought the snake in the attic, and although I know the snake and the scorpion were like different forms that the demon shows up in, I get that. But I just thought the jump scare was stupid in the attic. You know, it reminded me of the one in the Conjuring 3 with the rat in the cereal box. It's like,
so stupid. Yeah.
I didn't like it. And I think that like they put all these cheap jump scares into this movie that didn't need it, and a whole bunch of unnecessary horror tropes into this movie that didn't need it. And I thought it made it a little bit less scarier than it could have been, because what you get with scenes like that, and in particular the very end scene of the movie with the stupid Bagul jumping into the screen, it reminds me that it's just a horror movie. You know, it takes you out of what could have been like the scariest movie of all time. It absolutely could have been the scariest. And I think that you're just constantly getting reminded that this is just a horror movie with the stupid horror tropes. If you take all of them out, I think you actually have a scarier movie, because you get immersed in this story of somebody's Ethan Hawke's situation, which he just did a masterful job of portraying. Like you mentioned, like he said a whole paragraph without having to say it. You know what I mean? Yeah. He did such a good job. And then you get these dumb jump scares that I think take you out of his story, out of his character arc, which was really well written and really well executed otherwise. So I think that if you take a lot of that out, you have the scariest movie of all time.
It could be up there. Other thing, classic horror trope that I think was unneeded was him waking up at like 3 a.m. every night. The scenes, they weren't that good.
Yeah,
a lot of little kid jokes. I mean, little kid attempted jump scares there. And one of the ones that drove me crazy was it started that every time at 3 a.m., when he would wake up, he'd be looking for his daughter or whoever is sleepwalking or whatever, and the projector would be on. But he doesn't investigate how the thing turned on. Like, he doesn't look around the office. He doesn't turn on a light. Like, he does nothing to figure out who turned this thing on. And he just immediately starts going to check the backyard and all this, walking around the house with a bat. It's just, it was those scenes were pretty poorly done, in my opinion.
So for me, everything goes back to that final jump scare. And there was this, I don't remember, it had to be mid-2000s to like right around this movie, where every horror movie thought they had to have this ending with this like one final jump scare of the character jumping into frame.
Yeah.
And it just happened again and again and again. And for a movie that I don't have as many problems as you guys do, like I see your point on some of them. But I thought overall it's a really good horror movie. So to end on that is the worst way to end that movie.
Yeah, it's like a haunted house, like
it's
stupid jump scare, like one of those videos that you watch of like a painting and then it catches you. It's like, yeah, you don't need to do that in a movie that was already pretty damn scary.
It took a top three horror ending, like one of the best horror endings to a horror movie that I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just made it like, yeah, why'd you do that? Don't do that. You know,
I would have liked them to expand upon the part where the daughter has them all, where she's going to kill all of them. I would have liked for that scene to play out a little longer, and they could have taken away the scene of her going away with the Bagul guy. They could have cut that down a little bit, because all you really saw tied up was Ethan Hawke. You don't really see the wife, like the terror in her face, or the child, or the brother's face, or anything like that.
Yeah. And they're all drugged, and I think that he just woke up first. I agree with you. I could have used a little bit more, but I don't also.
I didn't need gore. I didn't need it to be gory. I just needed more tension in that scene, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe some.
What I loved about that last scene was the blood all over the walls, and that's kind of a callback to in the beginning. She's not supposed to paint on the walls outside.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
She's got all the drawings and all the blood and everything like that. Yeah, that is pretty great.
I do like that she added her drawing to like the cardboard box or whatever, and it was the family being dismembered. It was definitely like that. And the reason why I'm sitting here, I'm like, did I actually see this movie? Is because I do not remember that ending whatsoever. So much as to the point where I thought Sinister 2 was going to have Ethan Hawke in it, and that ending ruled that one out. Which I guess
would have been weird. Would have been pretty weird. I don't know how they would have pulled that off. couldn't have been any dumber. But well, real quick, I did tease that I thought Vincent D'Onofrio's character was a con. I felt it was lazy writing. They brought him in two times to just fill in all these gaps that they left just with information.
Just to get exposition, this means that.
And it's like, oh, okay, perfect. It's like, just felt lazy to me. And I like Vincent D'Onofrio. But
a little bit.
Just the way they set it up, too, where Officer so-and-so happened to know this, you know, occult expert. And, I get that.
You could even make the same argument for Officer so-and-so, that he was for the same reason.
They alluded to him believing in all this stuff too, because he's like, you don't believe in paranormal or any kind of ghost stuff, and Ethan Hawke's like, no, I don't. He's like, wow, you do? He goes, absolutely, I do. And then he kind of went through a few reasons. So they had kind of set it up where he clearly had an interest in the stuff. He wasn't just a random police officer. They also established right away that he was a fan of his work, and he had his book with him to sign the autograph. Right. The other route right away when we got introduced to that character was, I thought off the bat he was going to be the serial killer, and they didn't do enough character development with him where they only plugged him in here and there. So I was like, I don't think that twist is going to happen anymore. But that was one that also crossed my mind, where I was like, okay, the guy who's really interested in the case and everything, he could be the guy.
Yeah. Right. That didn't cross my mind, but that's a good call.
It didn't cross my mind either, but I see how you get there for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to, whenever I'm watching these movies, I'm always like trying to figure it out before everyone else does. So, we come to some conclusions there.
Scores, gentlemen.
I had this at 4.1. I very much like this movie a lot for all the reasons I said. And I had a lot of cons, but the cons weren't enough to take away from the fact that this movie is awesome with the found footage aspect, and it's different, and the killer ending.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology, now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with a city on edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorindi returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who has been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the South Side Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare, on Prime Video, now streaming.
Yeah, 4.1 for me.
Yeah, we probably did an injustice. We talked about it, but just those found footage clips are just so good and so well done. And the way they escalate his reaction to is just so good. 4.4 for me. And it's like a half star removal just for that jump scare at the end, almost, to be honest.
For me, I'm going 4.7, actually. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It obviously had its flaws, and it easily could have been a 5. But
shouldn't have let him wear that sweater. Would have been a 5.
The sweater was lazy, but honestly, for me, for the first movie, the child ghosts, that's what killed it for me. It would have been a 5, but these they were relatively unnecessary, and they were not. But the more importantly, they were not scary.
Yep.
At all.
I don't think they were supposed to be on the first one, though. I don't want to. We got to get to
ghosts.
The second movie,
they're ghosts. They're haunting the house. They're supposed to be scared. They're trying to use them in jump scare.
They're not. They're not comic relief. What do you have them in there for? I thought they were unnecessary. Real quick, fun fact about this movie, and then we'll move on to the other one. Is they made a list of the top 20 scariest movies according to science, and what they did was they had people watching the movies. Yeah. And they measured their heartbeats for beats per minute, and they get their resting BPM, and then they get their BPM during the viewing of the movie, and then they get their like peak BPMs, and they just compiled all this data, and they found the top 20. I won't go through the whole list, but fun fact about Sinister is it's number one on this list.
Yeah,
it's out a lot of heavy hitters. Number two is Insidious. Number three is the original Conjuring. Number four is Hereditary. 5 is Paranormal Activity. Then
I can guarantee you that is solely because of the found footage scenes. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, so this one had the highest... this one had the second highest BPM spike. So this one had the...
Lawnmower.
The lawnmower scene. And it was... where is it? The BPM... Oh, 131 beats per minute was the highest BPM strike. And then Insidious actually has it beat with 133. And if you've seen that movie, you know exactly what scene that was.
I have to rewatch it, but that's some hard style techno music BPM right there. So that's pretty high. Yeah.
Right. Have you, before we get into Sinister 2, have you seen Hereditary, Jesse?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. That is a movie you have to see.
That's the movie where I was halfway through it and I texted Rob. I was like, stop what you're doing. I watched this movie.
Yeah, I think you guys were talking about that one.
And as I was halfway through it, I was texting Dave like, holy fuck. It's that movie's bananas.
Yeah. Before we move away from this movie, we do have to give credit to the barking dog who is listed on IMDb as Chester the Chihuahua.
Nice.
I just found that interesting.
Yeah. Looked like
Is
one.
He in the movie?
Apparently. He's uncredited, but he's credited on IMDb, so that seems redundant.
I like it.
Intuitive. Anyways.
Interesting. So let's get a synopsis for Sinister 2.
So Sinister 2, written and directed by the same team, came out in 2015. Hiding from her abusive, estranged husband, Courtney Collins lives in a rural house with her 9-year-old twins, Dylan and Zach. Young Dylan receives nightly visits from ghoulish kids who show him disturbing images of families being slaughtered. It's all part of the grand plan, Bagul, the evil spirit who recruits innocent children to murder their loved ones. The only hope for this intended new victim may be former deputy who's familiar with Bagul's fiendish work from the past. So this is one of those sequels that just shouldn't have happened. Like, you had a great movie, like a perfect movie, and not perfect, but like you got a great foundation. And this is the case with a lot of the sequels to really good horror movies, is the second one just takes everything that was great about the first one and shits on it and makes it less great. And
there's no suspense to build anymore.
None.
The greatness of the first movie is everything we were talking about. Is it a serial killer? Is it supernatural? Is it this? Is it that? You're building up, trying to figure out what's going on. So you're going into the second movie and you have to know, you already know what's going on. You know what the situation is, right? And what I do give them credit for in this movie, because there ain't a lot. The one thing I give them credit for is the spin that they did for this movie was at least they tried to show you what the children were seeing as this built up, like to give you that twist, to give you another angle of it. So you're trying to see it from the child's point of view. It doesn't work at all, really. But at least that was an angle they try to approach rather than just do the same thing again when we would already know what's going on.
Right.
But it doesn't work.
Like, right.
It was a different angle, but they didn't bring much new stuff to this. And I had so many problems with this movie. I know you had a point there, Dave, but
no, go ahead.
They took everything that was great about the first movie, the found footage, and they overdid it in this movie. They expanded and based the entire movie off the least scary part of the first movie, which was the kids. So I understand what they were trying to do there, but none of it was scary. So now, great, I have an entire movie that's scary. You know what this entire movie was? This entire movie was a continuation of the last 10 minutes of the first movie, where it's basically, it's the entire wrap-up scene. You got Officer so-and-so going through, he's burning down the houses. They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to crack the case on how they can stop this demon. Everything sucked about this movie. But so you didn't have the, and like you were just saying, Rob, you didn't have the suspenseful buildup of what is going on. You already know what's going on the entire movie because you saw the first one, and this was the chaotic 10 minutes of the final 10 minutes of a horror movie was this entire horror movie. And it's where you already know what's going on. You already figured out who the demon is. You already know what it is. And it was too much. And the three main problems with this one, number one, kids aren't scary, still aren't scary. The story still sucks. Point number two, too much demon. And they did way too much demon in this one. And why the hell is he wearing a suit?
He was wearing a suit in the first one. That was my problem.
Yeah. I know. But like, why? And I know the demon John Wick, but like, it makes no sense for him to be wearing. Throw a scary cloak on him. Call it a day. Oh, man. Yeah.
Too much demon, show less too much of kids. Way too much monster in this one.
Way too much monster. I don't agree with you on the first one that he was shown too much, but this one is fucking bananas. Why are we showing him this much?
It's so
the kids, the ghost kids in this one are not good at all. What they should have done, in my opinion, for the ghost kids is kept it to the one main ghost kid. If that's what they were going to do, no. He was okay. Like he was fine. But when you're bringing the other ones, like he wasn't great. Nothing in this movie is great. I'm trying to find ways to fix this as we talk about it.
Yeah.
Like I would have probably focused on that ghost child.
They had so many scenes where all of a sudden these ghost kids are transparent. But then in other scenes, it looks like it's just a bunch of teenagers hanging out in a basement. It's
right.
They weren't scary.
Decaying face for no reason.
The way they inserted the films in this one, first of all, they upgraded it from 8 to 16 millimeter, which is, I don't know why they did that. But the way they inserted it into this movie just felt so forced. It's like, you have to watch the movies or he'll be mad. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. Like the first movie, it made sense. This one didn't make sense. They took this whole other angle. We're like,
it had to be a different angle, though. And I'm not defending it because
it didn't have to be a different. Like that didn't have to be a different angle. Like
the first angle was. Sorry, the first angle was Ethan Hawke stumbles across this and he's watching it. The second angle is this is how they get the kids. So they were trapping the kids.
Not how they got the kids in the first one.
So it doesn't.
You don't know that
they never really solved that in the first one. You never really knew how the daughter got tied.
You don't know if the daughter was the one that was actually watching those films.
She must have been manipulated by the kids in the house, and that's what they're trying to throw edge in the second one.
Right. I guess that makes a little bit of sense. It just still felt forced. And like on that, like with the exception of the Christmas movie, like the Christmas film, all of them were just too over the top. You got CGI in it now, which now it's like that takes away from the, you know, the low quality film, you know, with the crocodile one. Like that was stupid. It could have been a cool kill scene in a different time and place, but it didn't fit here. The Christmas one was good, but that was actually cut from the original movie, so that's why it was good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And but like they're all just too much, and they weren't scary anymore. You expected it. I didn't like the film aspect of it, and just felt really forced. The other thing I didn't like was the lead role. I thought he was good in the first one, Officer So and So.
Yeah.
For a supporting role, but he was not a good lead. That was not the right role for him, for that character. It was stupid.
I think it's funny that they never really gave him a name. I have to go back and watch the second movie because I feel like he introduced himself to the woman by name. No? I'll have to go back. I'm going to go back just to watch that one scene because I'm pretty sure at one point they gave each other their names. But I think it's kind of funny that they... even giving him the lead role, they never gave him a freaking name.
They never gave him a name, which is funny. I do like that they carried that over. That was pretty good. The other thing that I absolutely hated about this movie was the cookie cutter abusive husband. Just the cartoon
so bad,
character.
So bad.
So poorly written that it was actually funny. Like I laughed when he slammed the mashed potatoes in the kid's face. Like that was supposed to be like a really horrible thing, you know, and just like, and it was dude, funny. That was stupid.
Have you guys ever seen the Saturday Night Live skit where all of a sudden the family's screaming and then they just go back to eating dinner?
Yeah.
With Will Ferrell. Yeah. That was that scene. Like, she just flips out. She's like, stop it right now, Clint, or whatever his name is. And then they all just go back and he just wipes his face and they just go back
to eating dinner. Drive a Dodge Stratus. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's exactly what it is.
It's the exact scene. It's just like that scene. Yeah. Everything about that guy sucked.
Yeah. The whole movie did. Like, the whole setting up the one kid so that his brother got jealous and like, I can see him too. Like, shut up. Shut up. I hate you. You're terrible.
And then when the kids were like, oh, that doesn't matter. We didn't want you anyways. Like, what do you do? Like, what is that? Is that a twist? Is that supposed to be a twist? That was just stupid.
Yeah. Wow. The aggressive one's the one you want all along. Shocking. I'm super shocked. And the videos, like you said, they're too over the top. Like, the first ones were tough enough because you're like trying to imagine a young child doing this and how are they setting them up on the tree? Even if they are drugging them, how does this little girl, you know, like, and it's bad enough, but at least like there's some logic behind some of it.
Right.
When you're setting them up to get your plan is I'm going to hang them upside down and I am going to hope an alligator comes and eats them.
Yeah.
You know, and then what they end up showing is during the church one, Bagul actually shows up and he's the one who sends the rats. And it's like, all right, well then what are we doing here? Like, to me, the whole point was they had to do this on their own.
Right.
Like, although they're under like some sort of spell or whatever, they still had to be the ones to essentially like commit the act.
But then at the end, it was like that over the top aggressive kid. He didn't really seem like he was under a spell. Like, he just seemed like he really wanted to do it.
Right. Why is he not?
But at the end of the first movie, the Ethan Hawke's daughter definitely looked like she was under a spell. So it's like you kind of threw that out the window. And that's because you played too much into this kid being really tough kid. We have to get into the final scene, unless you guys want to touch on any of the millions of flaws before that.
No, yeah, I just want to finish that point. Sorry. I just want to finish the point of like, he's the final kid's running around. He has to do this on his own. The parents are, the kids, sorry, are helping him a little bit, but Bagul doesn't help him. But in the church one, he helps the kid with the rats. So why is he not helping the last kid? Like that just doesn't make sense to me.
And those kids running around the house.
Yeah. So like, it just, that's all I wanted to hit on there. It's just so stupid.
Yeah. Okay. So
I thought before we get into the end right there. So I thought the actress who played Courtney Collins, I think it was Susan something, but, she was a good actress. So that was
Shannon Sossaman.
She was a good actress. And I think that's one positive for this movie, but I think that her character was just so poorly written that you accidentally made her into like looking like the worst mother of all time. Like, I don't think they meant to do that, but she was just, she's, you know, gets her kids in these situations where where they're in this abusive relationship. You could say that's her fault. You could say it's not her fault. But she's got them pinned against each other. I think they accidentally wrote her to look like she was just an irresponsible, horrible mother. And I don't think
she's not nearly hard enough on the kids. They did try to touch on it where the kid's like, what are you gonna hit me like dad did? So it's like, okay, so how far can she go with these punishments?
Well, they were trying to show that too within the dialogue with the kids when the kids are telling the ghost kids are saying, or we're gonna kill your whole family. He's like, my mom didn't do anything, and the kid looks back and goes, exactly.
Yeah, something like that,
right? That actress though, I was happy to see her because I hadn't seen her in anything in a while, and I don't know if you guys remember, she was in a ton of movies when we were growing up, like a lot of like the movies, teen movies for like our generation.
I know she had a familiar face, but I don't remember. I couldn't.
She was at 40 Nights or something with Josh Hartnett, like just all those like teen movies, like when we were kids.
Yeah, right.
She was in a lot of those. So,
but yeah, you want to talk about the ending?
I do.
I guess. Do I want to? No.
So many flaws with this ending. And you started with number one there, Rob, was Bagul not helping whatsoever in the situation. The cross burning thing. So I will say, or them crucifying and then burning them or whatever. I will say that I was a little surprised that he didn't kill the whole family, but because it was going to be a bad movie. Well, yeah, there's that. But if you remember back at the beginning of the movie, the found footage was the burning of at least one of them, I guess. And I'm sitting here trying to jog my memory. I'm like, damn, wait, when we watched that footage, did they all burn? Because if so, then they're all dead here. And then we got another good ending to a really bad movie. And that would have been, I would have been fine with that. But then he does this stupid, like, evil villain, long drawn out, I kill one of you. And then, and of course, they just kill the stereotypical abusive husband or whatever. So you don't care that he goes. And he should have taken one of them, right? Maybe he should have killed the mom too. And then at least they come in and save the kid. And then it's not as bad. At least there's a little bit of tragedy in this movie. Oh, man. Okay. Ethan Hawke shows up. He hears the screaming. He goes in.
Not Ethan Hawke.
I'm sorry. Detective No Name goes in, and James Ranzone.
Yeah.
So he gets in his car, hits a kid with an SUV, and kid just gets up. He's like, "Oh,
gotta do it
now." I'm sore.
Whatever.
He predictably takes forever to cut them down, and then kid comes at him with a sickle. You win that fight 10 times out of 10. I don't care if the 11-year-old has a sickle. You win that fight. You fight him. You don't run away from the kid that with the sickle. You finally have a just opportunity to beat up an 11-year-old. You do it. You win that fight 10
times. Finally. You can fight an 11-year-old.
And you got him outnumbered. Yeah, sure. He's got a sickle. Cool. I'm just gonna wrap your arms around the back of you and slap you in the face a couple of times. Drop a little guy. Oh my god! You fight.
Why are you hitting yourself?
This idiot. Yeah. Exactly. It's a freaking 11. Dave, you have 13-year-old boys. How quickly would you be able to stop one of them with a sickle?
Immediately.
Immediately. So
I could both have sickles. Stupid.
Like there was a scene in the new Obi-Wan show. I know it was completely unrelated, but there's this one chase scene. I think it's in episode one where this little princess, she's like a toddler. She's like 3 or 4 years old, right? And she's running away from these grown men, like three grown men that are chasing her down. I think one of them is a guy from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the actor anyways. And all three of them are chasing this girl and they just can't catch her. And she's sitting there like running like a toddler with her tiny legs. And it's like, dude, I've chased my kids. You're catching her in 0.5 seconds, but they're on this long chase through the woods. Like, dude, it's a kid with tiny legs. You're going to catch her. Anyways, but that was the biggest problem. I'm like, dude, turn around, win this fight, you idiot. They run through a cornfield. That was corny, not scary. Of course, they run into the house and lock themselves in a bathroom. It's like, dude, fight this kid. And then all the ghosts come in. Everything was so bad in that final scene. I'll let you guys take the rest of it, but
100% agree. That was my note on the end of this movie is like, would beat the kid up. It's not believable. It's not scary. He hasn't been like enhanced with any demonic superpowers. He's just a kid with a sickle and you're all running from him. It's stupid. I hated it. So not to pile on about that point.
If they did, just to touch on that real quick, because if they did allude to the fact that he has like enhanced strength, maybe that's because he survived an SUV smashing into him. But then they didn't do anything else to prove that he has enhanced speed or strength or killing ability or anything. So throw that out the window.
Right. I think the writers backed themselves into a corner with this ending because I don't know what they could have done to make it good. They killed the whole family off. I mean, that's less stupid, but now it's just the same ending as the first one. So that's also stupid. So what do you do there? I mean,
well,
you kill
the family off so that you can set up a third sequel because the house still exists, so you can keep the cycle going. What you should have done, probably. My problem is, are we going to establish rules in this, or are we not going to establish rules in this? Meaning, in the first movie, Ethan Hawke was able to see the ghost kids like in a picture. They were never in like view of him, so he never saw them like in person, but he was able to see them. In the picture, and he might have been able to see him one time with the hand.
I think they showed up at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, but he was dead. So maybe not. I don't remember if he saw them towards the end of the movie, though.
I don't think so. But he was able to see him in photos. And in the end of this movie, none of the adults can see the kids. All they can see is the stuff flying around. And it's like, what are your rules here?
He almost see them. There was actually one of the pretty good scenes was inside the church. He had the flashlight and you could see the shadow of the kid.
Yeah.
He took it away, and then a predictable jump scare. But
God, the worst. Like another rat. Why is that a jump scare in every horror movie?
Every single time.
You know,
I thought it was gonna be another scorpion.
And we don't know. And I guess it would have been scarier with the rat if we had seen the church scene first. But we have no references to what happened in the church, right? So, like, yeah, you see all the rat shit and you see the rat, but that means nothing because you just look at it like in a dilapidated building, and you're not, your mind's not going really back to like when he saw the rat, like, oh, you know what I mean?
And if you go, if they flipped those scenes and showed you the found footage from the church, you would have noticed that that rat was actually wet with blood, like they were when they crawled inside people. So, because I remember looking at the rat, I'm like, why is that rat like wet? Like, he must have been like in oil or something. I'm like, maybe that'll play into it later. But
and he knew what happened.
Yeah.
But we don't. So, like, it makes no sense.
Yep.
So, I don't know.
And also, like, that stupid scene with the rat climbing through the people, like, how many movies are we going to use that in? Like, it's in multiple, like, medieval torture methods. It was in a couple of horror movies already. It was in, it's not surprising to me anymore.
Did they do it in Saw?
Yeah, maybe. I assume so.
But it's like, how many times are we going to, like, it's not even, like, shocking anymore. It's like, okay, so the rat's going to chew through the person. That sucks. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah, they dropped the ball in this movie big time.
Yeah.
It was a cash in. It was a cash grab.
Yeah.
It was. Sinister did so well. We could throw anything we want.
This one didn't do terrible. They did like $53 million, I think, box office.
Yeah. I mean, you saw Sinister 1. And then you're like, Sinister 1 did so well. Let's make a sequel. And people were like, well, that first one was good. The second one's got to be good. And it was just absolute dog shit.
It was bad.
0.7. That's what I'm giving it.
I was going 0.7, Dave?
I had it at 1.3.
Yeah, I'll go. Oh man, it's hard giving it anything. I'll go 1.2.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie.
No, we're not.
I mean, there's no real redeemable reason to watch this movie.
No, not definitely not watch it. I mean, there's some pros, maybe there. I mean, I think even though I don't like the lead actor in that lead role, I thought he was still pretty funny, and there were some funny moments in it. With him, and I think there's generally some decent acting. I didn't think any of the kids in this movie were that great, but
they weren't scary in the first one or the second one.
No, but at least in the first.
Oh, you mean the kid actors? They're pretty unlikable set of boys. There, very beat upable if you need to fight them in a cornfield.
But that I think shows that they were okay at acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were good enough. Yep.
If you believe that they were shitty, but cinematography was fine. I thought it was shot pretty good. I don't really have any issues there, other than the issues that I talked about with the I can't even call it Super 8 because they didn't use it, the 8mm. But I mean, that's why it wasn't a zero, like in The Descent 2.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know, man. Don't watch this movie.
There's no reason to
waste your time. Don't waste your time.
It was never really scary.
Go watch on YouTube the Christmas scene. And that's all you need to see from this movie.
It was fine. Yeah.
That's what I would say. Like, that's all. I don't think that any of the other Super 8 stuff was good. I don't think the kitchen repair one was good.
I actually kind of like the kitchen one with the electricity. Kind of how their arms went up and all charred after. That was okay. But overall, yeah, they milked all of the good things that happened in the first one and capitalized on the bad things. They did everything that they could to absolutely ruin the franchise.
Yeah, so. There's a reason you didn't see a third.
Yep.
Disappointing. Yeah.
There was a real reason you didn't see a third. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's horror movies, where we covered Sinister 1 and Sinister 2. Who wants to tell the people what we are watching for our next set of horror movie reviews?
Our next set of horror movie reviews were requested by a listener. Do you have his name handy?
Oh, I don't have it on me.
Why don't you look that up while I talk about these movies? So, a listener reached out to us and requested a couple of movies. So if you reach out to us and request movies to us, we will cover them if we haven't already. And these two, it just so happens that we have not yet covered them.
It was Ryan M.
Ryan M. Thank you, Ryan. We're going to cover them. These are two movies that are actually in that list of horror movies that I just top 10 that I just listed for the top 10 scariest. The original Insidious movie from 2010, was it?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And It Follows, which came out a few years after that. Actually, I think that might have been more recent. I think that might have been 2018.
I think it's like 2017, 2016.
Yeah, right in there. Right in the mid 2010s. So those are the two movies we're going to cover.
2014. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is older than I thought. Mm-hmm. Hereditary was 2018. That's what I got confused. We were talking about that. But yeah, so It Follows and Insidious, the original Insidious movie, are the two that we're going to cover. And if you're on Patreon, we are also going to cover, for Patreon followers only, Black Phone, which is a new movie with Ethan Hawke that is, I believe, it's in theaters now, right?
Yes, it's in theaters now.
So we're going to cover that for Patreon only. So if you haven't seen those movies, go watch them and follow us here. And follow us on Patreon if you want to see us review the new one.
Yes. And then you'll be able to catch us live on Tuesday, 9 p.m. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch. Come check out a brand new episode of Hometown Ghost Stories.
And that's going to do it for us at Hometown Ghost Stories. We will see you next Tuesday.